welcome to this week's edition of the We Are Podcast on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. We've got spring football in action, and we got the blue-white game coming up next week. So we got to hear from some Penn State football players this week, including Drew Aller, Nick Singleton. Always interesting to hear what these guys have to say during the spring. I mentioned last week on the podcast, and I think a number of you agreed with me. I heard read comments from you on this, that spring football has to be taken with a little bit of a grain of salt because everybody's just kind of talking a big game. You don't ever really fully know what to expect. But at the same time, this is a time of optimism. And if you've got a good team, which Penn State certainly has a good team, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to talk a big game and you're going to hype everybody up and get everybody motivated for the fall. So there are a lot of things to look forward to with Penn State football for the fall. What I want to discuss this week is the offense and what we can expect, pros and cons, that sort of thing. I'm going to write a story for the website on Drew Aller with realistic expectations for him. So that's going to be a little bit of a separate thing. I'm going to focus this a little bit more on Andy Kotelnicki, the new offensive coordinator. So we heard from, you know, Nicholas Singleton. If you love Penn State football and you followed this stuff closely during the spring, you probably saw Singleton, you know, make the comments on Zoom throughout the week that, you know, they're getting the ball to the best players and the plays are working. And so those are the kinds of things that get fans excited, right? If you're a football fan, you want to hear little bitty nuggets like they're getting the ball to the best players and the plays are working in practice. Well, no crap. Okay. Obviously they're working in practice. Okay. I mean, this is why I'm not trying to be a cynical media person, but I do, again, take with a grain of salt what players are saying in April about what they're doing and what we can expect and all that. Now, I've given a lot of thought to this, and there is something to be said for the very simple component of, hey, let's get the ball to our best players. Again, well, no crap, right? But do offensive coordinators always do that? Do play callers always do that? You know, it might sound very, very simple, and it might seem like, well, yeah, of course, Nick Singleton, you know, should be excited about let's get the ball to the best players and plays that work on offense, you know, during the spring, and you can get excited about the creativity and all that. There is positives in that, and you want to feel good about what you're working on. Because I'm not fully certain. You take a look at Mike Yurcich the past couple of years, and you know over the years, whatever your favorite football team is, you can always have complaints here and there about why is this guy touching the ball more, or why is this guy touching the ball? Why isn't that guy touching it more? Why aren't they doing things to get this guy more involved? Obviously, if you know Penn State football, James Franklin's insistence on getting the tight ends involved more the past couple of years, because that's not something Mike Yurcich really was terribly comfortable with or really kind of even seemed to want to do. But James Franklin had said, hey, we got really good tight ends. You're going to get them the ball or else. Okay, so where I want to go with this from a pros and cons, you know, optimistic kind of versus pessimistic view is with the Andy Kotelnicki hire and play calling and system that he's installing. Because while it sounds really good, we're going to get the ball to the best players. And Drew Aller's talking about how he's competing more in the spring right now. And we can hear all these. It all just depends on what kind of scope you want to paint this with. You want to hear all these positives and think Penn State's going to score 48 points a game this year. I mean, unstoppable. Okay. That'd be great. That'd be great. The plays are working. Get the ball to the best players. Go score 40 plus points. I know Andy Kotelnicki had success at Kansas. That's the Big 12. This has been, will be my concern about Penn State's offense. Mike Yurcich had great success at Oklahoma State. Then Penn State's offense was completely dysfunctional against Ohio State in 2023. Does a coach's background, where he had success, how he had success against different levels of competition matter and come into play? And I do believe that absolutely. I'm not trying to be too negative or pessimistic here. I want to believe that Coach K's offense is going to come in and be really creative and do cool things and find different ways to take advantage of defenses and some different schemes. Man, I would love that. You know what I love to see in football? I love offense, baby. I love points. I want to see explosive offenses. I remember the 2016 Penn State offense. My God, it was a thing of beauty. They could score at any point from anywhere on the field. Got the ball at their own 15-yard line. Boom, 85-yard touchdown. Rose Bowl against USC. Boom, one play touchdown. One play touchdown. One play touchdown. Saquon, Chris Godwin, whatever. McSorley doing great. That 2016 offense was just mesmerizing if you are an offensive football fan. I love to see it. Can Andy Kotelnicki come in and do anything close to that with Penn State? Well, he doesn't have Saquon. He doesn't have Trace McSorley. So, you know, it all depends on the weapons you have. And Joe Moorhead came from Fordham, okay? So, you know, it's not like Joe Moorhead had proved himself at some gigantic high level of college football. He had been the head coach at Fordham, and he came in, and what he did was tremendous at Penn State in 2016. I'm not going to lie to you, though. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I think defense is any damn good in the Big 12. Just the opposite, in fact. How many of you watch Big 12 football? It's garbage defensively a lot of times. And so when I hear Nick Singleton say, we're going to get the ball to the best players. We're running plays that work. Okay. It'd be awesome if they work in the Big Ten. It'd be awesome if what Coach K comes in and does works great in the Big Ten. But do we need to buy hook, line, and sinker in April that this offense is going to do those kinds of things against Big Ten defenses? That's the concern. Andy Kotelnicki has never coached a game in the Big Ten as a Big Ten offensive coordinator. He's coached against Big Ten teams, and he had success at Kansas, and he could do different things at Kansas. And I think we all should realize and understand that defenses in the Big 12, by and large, again, I just don't have a whole hell of a lot of respect for what they do defensively as a conference in the Big 12. I haven't in a long, 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 long time. It's just not the Big 10. And so my skepticism is that, yeah, Mike Yurcich did all this at Oklahoma State. He had Mason Rudolph and threw for 4,900 yards at Oklahoma State. Well, I mean, Penn State, their passing game in a lot of ways was dysfunctional with a five-star quarterback in Drew Aller. Yeah, he didn't turn the ball over very much, but, you know, could they do anything down the field at all in 2020? No, it was ridiculous. We all know that. I'm not rehashing all that for the billionth time. So what I struggle with, I'm not a fan, see. I want to explain this to everybody. If you're listening to this podcast 10 minutes in, thank you, and I appreciate the feedback I get, and I like to think that the people who listen to this truly want perspective that's not just spoon-fed to you all the time. I want to make you think a little bit. You want to be positive. You want to be optimistic. I get it. You're a fan. Well, I'm not a fan. I'm not somebody that's going to sit here and try to dream up every possible positive thing to tell you about how everything might go great. I'm also not negative. I get criticized for being too negative. I'm really not. I want to see Penn State score 50 points a game. It'd be awesome. Let's go back to what they had in 2016. Be awesome. If you're listening to this and you listen week after week, I'd like to think that you respect my approach of telling you how things, you know, that not everything is always going to be the hunky-dory best case scenario. I'm not thinking it's going to be a worst case scenario either. But what I expect is all these plays that Nick Singleton's talking about working, you know, in spring football, I'm guessing a lot of them aren't going to work in the Big Ten. I'm guessing that, you know, he's going to try to come in and do some different, Coach K's going to come in and do some different things with the offense, and some of it's going to work and some of it's going to fall flat on his face because he's never experienced this before. Yeah, he's coached. When he was at Buffalo, he coached against Penn State. When he was at Kansas, he coached against Big 12 defenses, and he has an idea of what he wants to do and what he thinks is going to work. Is it going to work against Big Ten defenses? Going to work against a more rugged physical style of defense that he's going to see in this conference in year one with an offensive line that quite frankly might be, I don't know that the offensive line is going to be all that good given what they've got to replace. So again, I do intentionally try not to be overly negative, because again, it does sting me a little bit that some people say, Geiger, you're just always finding a way to criticize Penn State. I'm finding ways to be realistic. And I know that Mike Yurcich's offense at times really crapped the bed at Penn State and in the Big Ten, especially in big games in 2023 against Ohio State and Michigan. Despite what we hear about how great this offense is going to be, and it might look really good in the blue-white game next week, although they're not going to show their hand in a lot of ways. The reality, as I'm telling you this in early April, is the reality in May and June and July and August and early September. Until they get on the field and prove that they can do these things against Big Ten defenses, there will need to be questions about what this new offense is going to be able to do. And look, I'm not even talking about the personnel with the wide receivers. That's a whole separate discussion. Are the wide receivers good enough to beat and break down Big Ten defenses? I'm just simply pointing out from an offensive philosophy standpoint, you have a new offensive coordinator that while we think he can have success, until he proves that he can have success, I'm not just going to buy hook, line, and sinker. Oh, these plays are all working in spring football, and we're getting the ball to the best players, and I'm real excited about it. Okay, let's be excited about it, but also be realistic in understanding that until we see it be productive on the field, we are going to need to question if it will be productive on the field. Alrighty, welcome back. So I want to get into what the future of college football might look like. I mentioned this in the Penn State feed throughout the week at DK Pittsburgh Sports. The Athletic came up with a story that, you know, apparently there's maybe some talk or something in the works about creating a college football league of, I believe the story said, 80 teams. Okay. And then, you know, 70 teams would be safe. And then you would have relegation like they do in English Premier League soccer and some other leagues around the world. Okay, so I want to get into that a little bit about what the future of college football might look like. I do believe that at some point in the not too distant future, we will have one college football league in this country that is its own entity. And by that, I mean it will have broken away from the NCAA model, and it will be, for lack of a better way to look at it, a professional college football league. I've talked about this for years on my radio show. I think we're going to have a professional college football league of X number of teams. Now, how long away is this going to be? You know, I don't know. I think a lot of it depends on the court system, legal battles with regard to employees and unions and all that. Will it be within 5 years? No. Might it take 15 or 20 years? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you do see stories all the time talking about how it's getting closer and closer, and it's not too far off that this kind of, you know, college football league will take over. But legally speaking, I just think there's so many entanglements that while I do believe it's inevitable for something to happen, say within 5, 6, 7 years, I don't know that that's realistic, because you have all these conferences and TV contracts, and there are just so many legal things that would have to get worked out. Okay. But my guess is within 10 to 15 years, we will have a college football entity that is its own really league. Now, the story in The Athletic this week talked about 80 teams. No way. There's no way you're going to have 80 teams in this league. That's ludicrous to me. To me, the number probably falls somewhere in the 50 to 60 range. I mean, to just think that just because you're in a Power 5 conference right now, that you're going to be grandfathered in to some major college football league is ridiculous. Okay, so fine. So the Big Ten has Rutgers in it and Indiana. Well, does that guarantee that Rutgers deserves a spot in a major college football association, given the track record of their football program? What about Vanderbilt? Again, Indiana from the Big Ten, Vanderbilt from the SEC. So this notion that you're just going to take all these Power Five teams and they automatically get in to your college football league. This college football league is going to be based on market size, TV contract, or TV marketability, success of your program, a lot of different things, just like we've talked about with the Big Ten over the years. Well, why would the Big Ten want this team or this team? Why would the Big Ten want Pitt? Pitt wouldn't bring anything to the Big Ten. There's no Pitt wouldn't bring the Pittsburgh TV market to the Big Ten. They've already got that with Penn State. There's no reason for the Big Ten to add Pitt financially. Hey, look, you know, that's what a lot of this major college football league is going to come down to. What can you do for us? What can you bring to the whole big picture? Now, where that's going to get really, really dicey is places like Kansas State. You know, Kansas State's got a good football program. Should they be in the major college football league? Absolutely. They can compete in that. Could probably go pretty far a lot of time in some cases. Is Kansas State really going to bring a TV market? Not really. Not that you can't get somewhere else, or not that you can't get, you know, in a bigger area somewhere else. So when I talk about when is all of this going to happen, that's what it comes down to for me, is the legal entanglements. How many teams are you going to have? What teams are going to be on the outside looking in? And let me use Pitt as an example here. If there's 48 or 50 teams, Pitt's in. Okay, Pitt is in a college football league that has 50 teams. Is Pitt in a college football league that has 40 teams? That's a different discussion. Okay, is Pitt, look, folks, before anybody gets offended here, all and any Pitt fans get, God, you hate Pitt, Penn State, Homer, all this bull crap that I hear. I'm talking about finances I'm talking about TV market. I'm not talking about, can you win a game on the field? That's never been what it's about. you know, with say Pitt versus Penn State. It's not whether Pitt can beat Penn State. Of course they can sometimes. It's about what do you bring to the table. If you're going to have a professional college football league, market size will matter. Are you going to have teams in tiny little markets that don't bring anything to the TV contract, to the behemoths? So that's what I'm getting at, really. If you have a league of 40 teams, is Pitt in that? You know, I don't know. My guess would be no. 44, 48, 50, then Pitt would be in. Okay. So, but that's what I'm really getting at here about what I think ultimately a professional college football league would look like. To stretch beyond 50, whew, man, are there 50 good enough programs, big enough markets to matter? Okay. That's the key. I could see 60 and you have 10 that are being relegated. You know, say you have 50 that are safe and then an extra 10. And then, you know, you could have your relegation there, you know, but how realistic is that? How can you recruit? How can you hire a coach? You know, how can you sustain a program over any period of time if you have relegation? And that would be a challenge, I think, for college football. So what is the number for how many is going to be in this league? Is it 50? You know, look, I don't know what the number would be. I don't think it's 80. So when I saw that story and it said 80, I just laughed out loud. How the hell are you going to come up with 80 quality, high quality football programs in major markets that people in this country are going to give a crap about? Rutgers, Indiana, Vanderbilt. Just because they're in power conferences now, does that mean they're automatically grandfathered into whatever this league might be? You know, I don't think so. I think you're going to have some long and hard discussions about some of these places. Look, Rutgers maybe gets in because the quote unquote New York market, although I've always laughed about that. Nobody in the New York TV market cares about Rutgers. But as we look ahead to the future of college football, I do think it's very fascinating to try to come up with what, you know, a couple of things. How many teams, how long it will take for this to happen, who will govern the whole thing. We can blast the NCAA all we want, and I do, and I will. I think the NCAA is a fraud. I think it's a gigantic joke of an organization. But when these 40, 50, 60 teams or whatever break off into their own college football league, who's going to govern that? Who's going to come up with the rules? How much cheating will go on? Will there be governance? Will there be penalties? I'd like to think that this could happen within 5 to 10 years, but this is all part of the legal entanglements. This stuff's going to have to work its way through courts. When the players become employees and when they're able to form unions and when they can collectively bargain, these are all factors as well. So I'm very, very intrigued about what the future of college football might look like, but we still have 25 balls up in the air that we're juggling to try to determine how you're going to piece all of this together and make it all work. No, the NCAA is not a good organization, but it is a governing body. So when these 50, 60 teams or whatever break off in their own college football, you've got to have rules. You've got to have governance somehow. You've got to have people holding everybody accountable if they're cheating, be it with scholarships or academic fraud or NIL violations or recruiting violations or whatever. You've got to have the legalese come into play there. So as we sit here, you know, in the spring of 2024, and we talk about what this might look like in 5 years, what this might look like in 10 years. It's easy to say, and you'll see a lot of stories written about this. It's easy to say college football is heading rapidly toward these kinds of changes. But these are not changes, I don't believe, that are going to come as quickly as many people believe, just simply because it is so complicated, so complex in so many areas that to just completely scrap the system you've got and throw 50 or 60 teams into one professional college football league, man, what about the TV contracts that are currently already in place with these leagues? That's another factor. But I was reminded of that with the AC, with the Atlantic story, the Athletic story about, going to 80 teams. I just don't see any way that you have 80 teams in a college football league. There just are not 80 significant enough programs in this country to justify them being in one, primary league themselves. Third and final segment of the We Are podcast. Just wrapping things up here. I was on vacation down in Orlando last week, so I was kind of removed from some of the Penn State football coverage and other things going on. I didn't do my daily radio show. One thing I like to do on this podcast is recently I will have a Penn State guest on my radio show discussing something at length, football, wrestling, or basketball, whatever, and then I'll end up using them on the podcast. I think hearing but from listeners, a lot of people have really liked those extended segments that we can have. So I didn't have one on the podcast this week because didn't do my radio show last week. Coming up on the podcast next week, we'll talk a lot of Penn State spring football, and I will have a guest for you next week. We can kind of get and really dive into some football elements more so than just me talking about various things. Again, I will have a story on some expectations about Drew Aller. I almost said Christian Hackenberg, about Drew Aller, realistic expectations for him for the 2024 season. Can he be a superstar? Can he be really good? Can he be great? Can he be mediocre? Could he be bad? Will this be his final season at Penn State? So a lot of different elements, coming into play there. But so you can look forward to that here in the next couple of days. But for next week on the podcast, again, we'll really dive into some specific elements of the Penn State football program with some discussions heading into the Blue Wide game. Appreciate everybody for tuning in this week. If you want to hear me talk about anything or shoot me a message, you can here in the comments, or shoot me an email, cgsports12@gmail.com. I always love hearing from people there. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll talk again next week.